This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Greetings, travelers.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Almost simultaneous. We're getting there.
Yes. If we ever do it simultaneously, I'm going to think X or, you know, them mess with us a little bit. But they could have already messed with us. Let's be honest.
Who knows? I'm surprised with me and you recording these two. I'm hoping they make the light of day, man, because I would not be surprised if they disappear on us. So.
No, it's true. It's true. But it's definitely... yeah, I had freaky dreams last night
because
the day in between recording. So I'm just letting you know I had alien dreams last night. I'm not a big fan, not 10 out of 10.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but
you really are that sorry.
Well, I mean, that's the point of this, is to bring up conversation and to make you realize there's a lot more going on out there than we even talk about. So for those of you just joining us, we did a part one of this where we went through, I would say, most of 1973, discussing all the strange and unusual UFO and UFO adjacent encounters from that year. Talk about high strangeness, right?
Oh, it's totally bizarre, but I can't wait. Okay, aren't we getting into October?
We are going to hit October with the ground running. Remember some of the key things from yesterday that we talked about. Remember, it was
shiny silver suits.
Silver suit.
Sometimes the crafts make noise. Sometimes that sound like a generator. Sometimes they do not. There's a lot of those bubble crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of scorch marks on the ground in locations where they had those kind of encounters. And mm-hmm. a lot of shadow figures behind the windows of the ships.
And a quick recall of the four different types of close encounters. You remember those?
The first one is seeing something at closer than like all the way in the sky.
Yeah, 500 feet.
The second one is coming very close to the vehicle and having like a burn mark or some evidence, right? That
physical evidence.
Something there. The third kind is interaction with an alien species. And the fourth kind is being abducted and anal probes.
We had 1, 2, and 3 pretty much covered.
Yes.
Earlier in the year. We had maybe 1/4, but we are now in October.
Okay. Yeah.
October marks the peak of this 1973 thing. And there's even one night here in particular that has its own name.
Oh.
I will get to that very shortly. But that's the night everybody talks about 1973. Nobody talks about all this other stuff that happened. And like I said, combining these databases from these three sources primarily, I was able to go, bam, look at this. Look how many there are. And then I even dug in newspaper articles that weren't reported in those three things. Putting this all together is just insane. Some of these are going to be quick briefs, but we are going to go deep dives on a couple of these, the three famous ones. We'll start. October 1st, back in Giles County, Tennessee. That's not too awful far from us, Erica.
Not at all.
This one, an egg-shaped UFO. Three boys in Anthony Hill, Tennessee, saw this craft, and inside it was a large, hairy, rigidly moving, quote, occupant.
Okay.
That's a report, and this is actually from the Tennessean newspaper. Don't have much more on it. I looked into it. Not a lot of people investigated this. I don't know, but definitely interesting.
Uh-huh.
So October 4th, this is Columbus, Mississippi.
Oh.
This one had an abduction attempt. Gary Chopik reported that he saw a saucer swaying like a boat anchor with a hose-like appendage extended below. And then he saw a silver-suited being crawling around the craft, and it went towards him, and that hose-like appendage was trying to suck him up as it had been sucking up water. And that's when he ran and got away, and then the ship disappeared.
But somebody else, two other people have reported that hose-like appendage. So
we have one in the South China Sea, and then we had another one in another river. That seems to be a thing, right?
Yeah.
Again, this is all coming together. Now, October 11th, I have to do a deep dive for this one.
Okay.
October 11th, 1973, Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Oh, another Mississippi. Okay.
Some people are going to know this one just from the name and the date. This is the strange case of 19-year-old Calvin Parker and 42-year-old Charles Hickson. It actually kind of became a day before. On October 10th, 15 different people, including two policemen, report seeing a large silver UFO slowly fly over a housing project in St. Tammany Parish in New Orleans, just right over the border in Louisiana.
Okay.
Now, it's, again, low hum. Some people said silent, but the police report said low hum.
Okay.
All right. 24 hours later, Hickson and Parker basically have the scare of their lives. All right. So these two men are both from the town of Gautier, Mississippi, and they were doing some fishing out on the Pascagoula River. It's a dark night, it's around 9 p.m., and they hear a buzzing hum behind them. Both men turn around to see what's making this noise. And they were amazed to see a glowing silver egg-shaped object with bluish lighting on its front side. This unusual craft was hovering just a few feet above the ground and about 30 feet from the shore of the river. And then they're amazed as a door opens in the object. And three strange creatures float out just above the water towards them. These creatures have legs, but they weren't really using them. They were just simply floating across the river at them. Parker and Hickson would later describe the beings as about 5 feet tall, and they had bullet-shaped heads without necks. They had little slits for mouths, and where their nose and ears would be, they had thin cones, conical objects sticking out, like carrots from a snowman's head, they said. They had no eyes, and they were totally gray and wrinkled skin like an elephant's. And they had round feet, but they had claw pincer-like hands.
Do we think they were wearing a suit?
Some sort of suit or something, but wait till the descriptions get a little more. It's very crazy. Some people think these might have been like robots or something. So Hickson's basically frozen, right? He's just, I can't believe this. And then suddenly he's grabbed by two of the creatures with those pincers. And then the third one grabs Parker and he just faints. Done. Hickson said later that when they put their arms under his body to support him, he suddenly just felt numb all over, like he had been tranquilized. And then he floated up into the ship. He saw Parker floating up. And he says, suddenly they were in a brightly lit room inside the craft. And in this room, he kept floating. And then there was this eye-like device that came out and kind of examined him all over. And they both start waking up at this point and aren't sure what they should do. Right? They're like, oh, God. And then the next thing you know, they wake up in the field next to the river.
Lost time. How much time did they lose?
Well, that's the question. They're not sure. So basically, they wake up. They don't know what to do. Do we report this? Do they just pretend this didn't happen? They were definitely afraid of ridicule. But they also knew Kessler Air Force Base was in Biloxi, Mississippi, not too far. So they were like, what do we do? So they first call the Air Force Base.
Okay.
And then the Air Force Base says, just call your sheriff's department. We don't want anything to do with this. This isn't us. We don't care. So they really weren't sure what they didn't want to tell the cops. They were afraid they were just going to get freaking ridiculed. They decided, let's tell the newspaper because we don't want this to happen to anybody else. Right? They went to the newspaper and the newspaper was closed. They're like, well, we got to tell the sheriff then. It's just, this has made our decision for us. They go tell the sheriff and the sheriff's convinced these guys are idiots, right? This is just a hoax. He puts them in a room, which was wired for sound, and hoped that they would slip up and reveal that they were corroborating their stories and get their stories straight or admit it was a hoax. It didn't happen. They were just terrified. Didn't know what to do. So now the news starts circulating and the press finally gets wind of the story. And then the wire services, it goes viral, basically. And within a few days, this was major news all over the U.S. And the ARPO, which is the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, they sent University of California professor James Harder to investigate. And our good old boy, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, represented the Air Force and came here to investigate. And he looked into the story. And they interviewed them together, Hickson and Parker. And then Harder actually hypnotized Hickson. But Hickson became so terrified during the hypnosis of what was happening and started screaming and thrashing that they had to abort the hypnosis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then they were told to take a lie detector test, which they both did, and they both passed. Harder and Hynek said, that's it. These guys are true. Hynek, at a later date, said, there was definitely something here non-terrestrial.
Oh, wow.
Right. Now, a couple weeks after this, the Coast Guard in the area and a fisherman both had an encounter with what they said was an underwater metallic object. Now, this object had a blue and amber light, and the Coast Guard chased it in the Pascagoula River. He said it was close enough to touch, but each time he prodded it with the large boat hook, it would turn off its light, move a distance away, and then suddenly the light would come back on. Now, this lasted about 40 minutes, and then the craft disappeared deep into the water. So that's in the same area.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the Coast Guard saying that happened.
Yes. So Parker and Hickson have held on to their story. And they both went on to live regular lives. No issues of all that. This is what happened to them. All right. October 14th. This is Omro, Wisconsin. A man observed three beings with grayish, wrinkled skin, pointed ears, and bald heads that appeared in his bedroom.
Ugh.
Oh.
I don't love that.
Okay. And now October 15th, Beckley, West Virginia. This one is back to a luminous object vehicle that just came over and started affecting automobiles all over the town.
Oh, wow.
And now, October 16th in Albany, Ohio, small humanoids with silver outfits are seen all over a ranch in that area, a cattle farm. That sounds very Hopkinsville, except we didn't start shooting at them.
That's good. That's good. It's always nice when you stop shooting at things.
Right, right. And now, October 16th, Lehi, Utah, a female abductee describes floating sensations and being examined by an eye-like object and entities in silver and blue uniforms with claw-like hands.
Yikes.
This is before Pascagoula had made national news.
No, that, well, and that, hearing all this, it sounds like they're just popping all over the place.
Right?
The wrinkly skin is interesting.
Wrinkly skin, silver, the clawed hands. I'm also trying to figure out the whole, with Pascagoula, the cones for the eyes.
I think it's the helmet. This is my theory from what everybody's saying. Even the clawed hands seem like, maybe gloves or something like that, and not actually like what we would consider. You know, like when you're going to pick up dog poop, I hate to make this analogy, but use the little claw thingy to pick it up. So I'm wondering if the aliens have the equivalent of a pooper scooper.
I was thinking more like the old deep sea diver suits. Remember, they have the little pincers to deal with stuff in the deep sea because they can't really have fingers because of the pressure.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not used to our gravity or our pressures. It very much reminds me back of Flatwoods, where we think the Flatwoods monster was in a suit.
Yeah.
Because the Frametown incident a couple of days later or a day later is where it's like half suit and it's like the more reptilian top.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
Some theories on the Pascagoula are that those were, like I said, robots and that they were kind of probe-like critters. It's an interesting theory. But we get to October 17th.
Okay. Do we? What's happening on October 17th?
October 17th, there is a historic concentration of encounters with humanoid-like entities across the southeast of the United States. This, according to researchers, has been dubbed the Night of the Humanoids because there are so many that happen.
Wow.
Now, a lot of skeptics say the reason it's all happening now is because Pascagoula starts hitting the newspapers around now.
Okay.
So a lot of people are just trying to jump in on that. But a lot of the people who reported this have no idea about Pascagoula. First one is in Goffstown, New Hampshire. Multiple witnesses of this one. Two self-luminous, silver-suited beings with large pointy ears and dark egg-shaped eye holes are walking along the road collecting rocks.
Interesting.
Putting them in a strange container. And then when the cops get there, they simply vanish.
Oh, wow.
Okay, now
that gives new meaning to earth rocks instead of moon rocks, earth rocks. I like it.
I think they're just looking for kryptonite because they've got an issue with some Kryptonians up there.
Yeah, there you go.
Protecting us from General Zod. All right. Watauga, Tennessee. Now, this one is an attempted abduction. Two children. Now, these children is pushing it. They're like 15, 16. Described a humanoid with claw-like hands reaching as if to snatch them. So claw hands
again.
That
sounds familiar.
Claw hands, right?
Yeah.
All right. So now we have to talk about the other humanoid that night. So this is our little quick deep dive. This is the Metal Man of Falkville, Alabama. Some people call him the Potato. This is one Carrie illustrated for Erie, Alabama. So now, Alabama's got its fair share of urban legends. It's got Huggin' Molly. It's got a lot of fun stuff like that. We kind of talked about them in the past. We'll probably do a deep dive on them. Our friend Connor Flynn did a movie about Huggin' Molly. I'd heard about the Falkville Metal Man. I never really dug deep into him until this. So here we go. This is that October night, 1973. Falkville Chief of Police Jeff Greenshaw was kind of hoping for a quiet evening at home after a long day of work. Instead, he got a call that changed his life forever.
Okay.
It was an anonymous call to dispatch from a frantic caller about a UFO in a field just outside of town. Now, Greenshaw really didn't like to talk about this, but he sat down for an interview in 2020. We got to be part of that for Erie, Appalachia. But that wasn't Appalachia, so I was stretching Appalachia as it was. So I've been saving this. Here we go. He said, I was hired in January of 1973, and this all came down in October 17th, 1973. I had to resign my position just a few weeks after. So what did he see? So his first thought was simply he was dealing with an idiot.
Which would be all of our first thoughts. That's right? Where we go first.
Yeah, he's like, after that, things were just so strange that this wasn't real. It wasn't really happening. But it was happening to me. Why me? So he was looking at the figure, said it was slightly taller than 6 feet, and it was wearing a reflective material. My initial thought, he said, was that it was maybe aluminum foil, but there were no pieces around there after it was all over. I didn't know what to believe at that point. All right. He described the suit in his report from that evening, saying it looked like his head and neck were kind of made together, like it was a real bright something, like rubber rubbing mercury on nickel, but just as smooth as glass. And different angles gave it different lighting. He said, the more I think about it, when I was a child, I used to watch the movie Lost in Space, and the robot in that movie, it kind of reminded me of that to some extent.
Okay.
He said it was not moving like a human. So that's, you know, Robbie the robot, right?
Yeah.
Now, he grabs his Polaroid camera, because that was around then. We were debating if Polaroids was around, but he had it. And he snapped 4 photos of what's standing in front of him. Now, before he took the photos, he did speak. He said, I said something to the effect of, like, howdy, stranger. He said, but he didn't. But there was no response. I didn't push my luck. At that point, I reached, turned the blue lights on the patrol car, and I saw how reflective that material really was. And when I looked back, it was moving away from me. So I decided to chase it down. And if I had to, I was going to run it over. But that didn't happen either. He took the photos and laid them out on the console of his patrol car. And when he looked back, the figure was moving. He said, it wasn't moving like you or I would move. It's like it had springs on its feet or something. And the strange being was said, you know, he said to have run away at speeds exceeding human capabilities. So he pursued on his patrol car, and he said he reached 35 miles an hour in the field he was in, and it still wasn't fast enough to catch this thing.
Oh, wow.
35 miles an hour.
So, it's nuts.
Yeah. Now, he would eventually lose sight of it after chasing it with his car, and it just kind of faded into darkness. And he was like, what the hell just happened? He had the 4 photos and he kept them in a safe place for several years following the encounter. He claims that almost 10 years later to the date, somebody broke into his home and stole those 4 pictures.
Wow.
Now, he filed a police report in 1983 regarding the break-in. I saw that report. But also missing was his service revolver and his shotgun from his house. And now his quote about this when we interviewed him was, I took them out and looked at them frequently for the 10 years I had them. Thought that's really weird. The only 3 things I had with me that night was the shotgun in the car, the revolver on me, and those pictures. And those are the only 3 things that came up missing in that robbery.
Wow.
He said, yeah, I pretty well withdrew myself from the public for years. And people had made life difficult for him because he, you know, recounted that experience. People were supposed to be my friends. The only thing I found out is I really couldn't trust anyone. I withdrew, I ran, and I went places to try to get away from it. He and his wife had 5 children, 3 of whom were adopted. He says, I turned out to be the person I never dreamed I would become because of what happened. It made me hard, but it made me strong as well. I came close to sanity. But my wife and God kept me from losing it. The only thing that kept me going, that's it. I'm still a believer in life after death. And at one point, I didn't believe that there was any other life source in the universe. But that changed that night. He never sought financial gain or anything. And he stuck to that account from that strange evening forever. And it made his life difficult, man. He had to give up his career. He had to give up everything for this. Now,
that's terrible.
Yeah. And there's the one photo is still there. And it does look like a guy, you know, dressed like a baked potato. It's weird. And that's the ones that I tend to lean more on, because what else could it be? Right? Why would it be?
It's very like true. Said, it's very weird.
Thought I was an idiot.
Oh my gosh. No, that's crazy. That's crazy. We'll have to include that in one of our upcoming books too when we do the
South. Yeah, when we get to that area, we'll delve into that. I have that interview still. So one last encounter on Night of the Humanoids. This was actually in Chatham, Virginia.
Okay.
This is two Utes, as we would say. Thanks for my cousin Vinny. Utes encounter. This is from the police report. A being with no eyes and hairy claws tried to grab them to the point where they were so scared they ran and called the cops. Cops thought it was a pre-Halloween prank.
I think that sounds like a Bigfoot.
Yep.
Or a dog man.
All right. So, man, like I said, this is getting crazy, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll get through the rest of October. And then we still got November, December, but those things slowed down a little.
Okay.
All right. And we'll be right back.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Okay, we're back.
Yeah, back. And so I've got one more October 18th.
Oh, okay.
And this is another big one. That same night, those guys, 9 p.m., right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we're at 10:30 p.m. And we are in Columbus, Ohio. 10:30 p.m., October 18th, 1973. P.J. Vollmer is the chief of operations for the FAA at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport. And he receives a visit from Lawrence Coyne, I believe that's how it's pronounced, C-O-Y-N-E, who is a police officer, who's also an Army active duty veteran. It was still in the reserves. And he comes in to tell him something strange just happened. And Vollmer's like, quote, "I personally have an extremely high regard for his integrity and capability, even with the story as fantastic as the one he shared."
Oh, wow.
Now, Coyne told him that he and three other reservists were flying back from Columbus the night before and had not only seen an unidentified flying object, but nearly crashed into it. So this is on the 19th, the report comes out.
Okay.
So that's why I put it on the 19th, but it actually happened on the 18th. So here's the report. At 10:30 p.m., October 18th, 1973, Coyne and three others, a man named Arrigo, Jesse, and Robert Yanishek. Why do these guys always have the hardest names to pronounce? They take off from Port Columbus International Airport on a Bell UH-1H Super Huey helicopter on their way to Cleveland. They've flown to Columbus for their regularly scheduled flight physical, which had finished around 10 p.m. They went directly to the airport, and Healy later noted that they were all cold sober and in perfect health for the flight because they'd had to do that physical.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes this completely believable from these guys. All right. Clear, cloudless night, little wind, and great visibility for 15 miles or more.
Okay.
Helicopter's about 2,500 feet over the ground, flying at about 90 knots, which a little over 100 miles an hour, I say. And shortly after 11, they're flying north over Charles Mill Lake near Mansfield, which is kind of in north central Ohio.
Okay.
And Yanishek spots a red light in the distance that first seemed to be flying parallel to the helicopter, then suddenly turned and started flying right at it.
Okay.
Coyne thought it was a jet from Wright Pat or one of the other air bases nearby, and he radioed Mansfield to see if there was any aircraft in the air at the time, and he got no answer beyond an acknowledgement of the communication. You know, we hear you, we'll look into it. So he starts taking evasive action. He basically dives the helicopter, but the other aircraft's following him. And he braces for impact, like, this is it. And he closed his eyes, he stiffened up, but then there was no crash. And then Coyne looks over and hears Healy say, look at that. And directly in front of them was a 60-foot-long silver cigar-shaped craft.
Wow.
The red light they saw was on the front. And on the back was a white light and a green light underneath. And those illuminated the entire interior of the helicopter as it shone in, almost like it was examining the craft and its crew. The radio wasn't working. The compass was spinning out of control. And Coyne looked down and realized the helicopter was actually rising. It was now over 3,500 feet above the ground.
Oh.
Yeah. Then suddenly, it was totally satisfied with what it saw. It turned away from them slowly, then sped up and disappeared out of sight in an instant. And the helicopter restored, done the worst for wear, and they went all the way to Cleveland. But there was one notable exception. The compass was completely broken and could not be fixed. They had to totally replace the unit the next day.
Oh, wow.
Now, they went and reported that. All those men went on to have very active, varied careers. Their credibility never questioned. They remained above reproach after the incident. And in fact, the National Enquirer awarded them $5,000 for having the most credible and valuable UFO report ever at that point.
Wow. That's big money for the National Enquirer in 1973. I'm going to look up how much money that would be.
Yeah, look that up, because now, in 1978, a few years later, Coyne actually testified before the United Nations, attesting to what he saw. He said, I am convinced this object was real and that these types of incidents require a thorough investigation. He advocated an international effort to maintain order for flyers who might have similar encounters.
Wow. And it's now, about $40,000.
$40,000 today. Damn. So I would say that would have bought you a nice car in 73. That same day, just a little note, Jacques Vallée, a noted astrophysicist, he also testified that day. And he had a great quote saying that the exploration of UFOs could be a gateway to a new and better world. It is our choice to treat it as a threat or as an opportunity for human knowledge.
Wow.
So I like that.
I do too.
Right? So that's all October 18th, Night of the Humanoids and the Coyne incident. So that's crazy.
That's so nuts.
The 19th, Ashburn, Georgia, a little south of us, a woman encountered 4-foot-tall metallic humanoid figure with a bubble dome helmet, and she described it as moving like a robot. Sound familiar?
Yeah, very familiar.
Right. A little shorter than Falkville, but same style. All right, October 20th and 21st. Now, this is in Puerto Rico, the El Yunque Mountains. Entities with long arms, pointed noses, and ears. They apparently abducted a person named Early Patterson. That person reported memory loss and also floating away.
Oh.
So, that sounds awfully familiar. October 21st, Covedale, Ohio. This one, a being inside an illuminated structure that looked like an egg was observed by an anonymous witness. And he said it was a hairy, ape-like humanoid inside the dome. Now, that's familiar as well, right?
That sounds like a Sassy Squatch.
Yeah, kind of. But also, there was one of those earlier.
Which also sounded like a Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, yeah. Bigfoot's from space. All right, so October 22nd, Hartford City, Indiana. Now, this one reported reports of silver-suited beings flying like helicopters, moving with no apparent propulsion, except maybe from their box-like feet. Now, again, sounds a little like Pascagoula.
Yeah. There.
That's October. Halloween apparently was quiet. I couldn't find anything for the week of Halloween. So.
Well, the ghosts are out then. Ghosts and ghouls.
Yep. So more people just assumed it was Halloween. So
yeah,
reports
people were like, oh, look, there's a bunch of people dressed as aliens.
Yeah, that silver-suited guy is an alien or something. But it picks back up in November a little bit. So nothing like October. Oh, my gosh. But November 2nd, this is in Goffstown, New Hampshire. Lyndia Morell, L-Y-N-D-I-A. That's a fun one. She reported that she saw a globe with a honeycomb surface and a window inside. In that window stood a small humanoid with a wrinkled face and large eyes. She says, I was unable to remove my hands from my car steering wheel. I felt the object took control. She fled the car and sought refuge at a nearby house where the police met up with her and confirmed she was visibly terrified. All right, November 4th. Again, does this sound familiar? This is in Goffstown, New Hampshire. Two more silver-coated beings were collecting rocks and using flashlight-like instruments on the ground.
Earth rocks.
Yeah, collecting more rocks. It's
we're going to start selling earth rocks at our booth, I think.
That might work. That might work. Okay, November 7th. Now, this is in Albemarle, North Carolina. So, now this one, again, we kind of got something like they're taking samples or something. So, this one is green silver-suited entities collecting leaves, water samples, and wood. And this was witnessed by many observers. And they seemed to be putting them in a pack that grew and grew and grew and then disappeared.
A bag and of then, holding. I like it.
Yep. And then they disappeared shortly thereafter.
X, I'm just saying, if I could get a bag of holding, that would be awesome. And I will never bring up aliens or space again.
Yeah, we'll switch to being a Bigfoot podcast like everybody else.
100%.
We'll just rank vampire movies again.
I'm down to re-rank vampire movies. I still think I win, but you know what? Next time we'll have Stacey Brown on with us.
Yeah, he's gonna be doing it. All right. So November 22nd, Joliet, Quebec. Numerous witnesses see orange lights in the sky, buzzing the town, and then some witnesses claim to see a humanoid dark figure with hairy claws marching off to a beam of light. Suddenly it just disappears.
I don't love that either.
One of the witnesses said it looked like he beamed up like Mr. Spock.
Okay.
So there you go. November 29th. This is in Highland Park, Texas. In this one, a witness describes a bright bar of light holding two balls the size of a house together. And the object was flat, bright, and silent. And it disappeared as he tried to get other people's attention, going, look, 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 and it vanished.
Yeah,
that's November.
Okay. Now we're into December.
End of the year.
Exhausting year. Go ahead. Yeah.
End of the year, more people are inside at this point. So I think that's one of the reasons why we have a lot less sightings in November, December. It's getting cold out there and just inside more. December 10th. Now, this is in the Hochries Mountain in Germany. This one, there was a proprietor of an alpine lodge and his caretaker of the land. They saw a bright red light sitting on top of the mountain. So they fired a flare to see if it was somebody in trouble. And then an egg-shaped object who brightened from the light rose and then approached the lodge. Then it turned into another color as the egg-shaped object began rotating lights. and it was clearly observed by both witnesses.
Wow.
December 13th.
Okay.
Bradenton, Florida.
Oh. Oh.
Okay. Now see if this sounds familiar. A man named Patrick Thrush, he saw a silvery UFO hover over the Braden River, or Braden Castle is. And then a tube extended out into the water and then retracted as he was taking a photo. And he said then the UFO came over his car and dropped iron pyrite rocks all over his car.
Interesting.
That's an interesting one. Instead of taking samples, it's like, ah, these are terrible. Here, let's get that guy who's trying to take our picture.
Giving a gift. Maybe they were keeping a gift. They're like, here, you guys seem to really like this. Drop, 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 drop.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah. Like,
you know, all right. So now, December 15th, this is in Vivorde, Belgium. And again, sounds like somebody taking samples. A witness named Vertonghen. I butchered that. He described a humanoid wearing a helmet and a respirator, and it was using an instrument to scan animals and items and rocks. And yeah.
Wow.
Thought it was a metal detector in his original description. Now, Christmas Day, December 25th, Adams County, Ohio, a phantom crash. This was reportedly a crash and strange activity in the area, but there was no physical evidence found, but there was an ongoing local wave of UFOs in that area at the time. And the military locked down a small section of that city from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, saying for testing reasons. Testing reasons.
Yeah, we
Christmas
see that
Day.
UT, just going to say.
Yeah, Christmas Day, decided to do some testing. I think it was NORAD tracking Santa. I think we had a reindeer down and they had to do some testing. So
interesting.
All right. So there we go. That's 1973. Two episodes full of UFO encounters.
It's just unbelievable how much stuff was happening then. And then, you know what's so interesting to me is how quickly sort of history's kind of forgotten this, because we talk about all the other stuff we see and you just go, look at how much that. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And people don't always put together that the abduction claims and the humanoid sightings and all that. I think they all just get lumped. Oh, it's, you know, UFOs are one thing. Is the creature sightings is something else. And they never put them together. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you put all this together, it's a crazy year.
It's an insane year.
Yeah.
And that makes sense why it was the year of my birth, because I feel like I'm kind of crazy sometimes.
That's why I dug into this, was just because of your birthday, Erica. So.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's not accurate, but it's sweet, and I appreciate it.
Let's just think about this analytically, right? So we've got occupant reports, lots of humanoids. This year stands out historically because of that. If nothing else, we've got a lot of presence of landed craft, which is, you know, close encounters, first and second kind, quite a bit. Lots of proximities, okay? And then we've got these really unique recurring traits, right? Wrinkled metallic skin, silver suits, robotic movements, odd appendages, claws.
I really think this is all, like, even the robotic, I think they're wearing spacesuits, and we have all seen that the spacesuits are not really easy to walk around in. They're not like you're wearing a scuba suit or something like that. I think these are all spacesuits. I think they're all very similar. I think the wrinkly skin is still the spacesuit, because I'm sure our, you know, oxygen level is probably different than theirs, right?
Yep.
And unlike the movie Galaxy Quest, you don't just walk out of the ship or every Star Trek episode hoping you could breathe the air there. And then, I'm fascinated by this. I can't wait to hear more of your deep dives on these things.
Yeah. And then we've got EM interference. That was all over the place. But how many vehicle encounters were engine failures and cars just starting, dimming lights?
Yeah.
Spontaneous starts and stops of vehicles. That helicopter being lifted up and stuff like, and then all the stuff going crazy. We get so many physical and psychological effects from witnesses, paralysis, temporary blindness. What was that one? Foggy eyes.
There's a lot of foggy eyes.
Yeah. Lost time, strange burns, strange scars. There's even a few reports. It's kind of vague about, you know, their hair color changes or suddenly they have health events afterwards and stuff like that. And then October, my God, the abduction claims. It's like a rash.
Like they went and took it to a new level. Like they were like, let's start here. And then, you know what? Why don't we just get samples? We'll get samples from this planet. We'll get different animal samples. And these ones that are driving around, we'll get those.
Yep.
With the claws.
It amazes me. And then how many people actually kind of accepted it? Public acceptance was actually okay for this. It wasn't, they weren't completely ridiculed. And yeah, law enforcement, Air Force investigations, and that Hicks and Parker testimony from Pascagoula, that it even had polygraph evidence and behavioral analysis where they left them in the room together to see what they would do. And that's,
yeah, no, it's incredible. Crazy. Crazy.
All right, we got photographic evidence from some of those. Remember, I showed that picture the other day, and we have radar evidence. Some of these were picked up on radar. I mean, some of these kind of rare cases that may not have been what they were, but I think the vast majority tends to lean credibility. And then we had a lot.
I was going to say it's something. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's not easily explained away, you know.
No. And you were pointing out a lot of them near military and nuclear facilities, right?
Yep.
That the USS Mauna Kea and Piedmont and Hokkaido, all near nuclear power plants, military bases, or strategic resources, right? And
true. You've now done two episodes, Mark, back to back, that are going to get us in trouble with X and his party. So how are you going to take us away from this one?
Well, we got two more little things I want to point out from all this. Was first, we had a lot of geographical hotspots. You even mentioned this yesterday, where it seemed like we were in the same areas a lot. A lot of Midwest, right? Everybody thinks, oh, it's the Hicks. It's all that. No, this is a lot of Midwest. Yeah, we had Missouri, we had Illinois, we had Indiana and Ohio. I think we're the most.
Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, a lot.
We had Southeast. We had Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia were a lot. A couple North Carolinas. Very central global locations like Japan. We had a bunch in South America. We had a lot in Europe. And
Australia and China.
Each one kind of had waves, right? Yeah. It was like suddenly they were all together and then gone and they moved elsewhere. Now we have multiple witnesses for a lot of these. Dozens, hundreds of witnesses in a couple of the cases. And most were corroborated by police, reporters, investigators. This is crazy. That just means the documentation for 1973 should be one of the most intensely investigated years in UFOlogy. But
I agree.
I think it's kind of just glossed over, except for those major ones, right? Those are the ones that deep dives into Pascagoula and the coin incident. I think we need to give these others a little more deep dive, because like I said, some of these, it's just a report. Why were they not dug in?
Yeah.
Especially with so much else going on. I guess it was a crazy year. There was a lot going on. Nixon, this was right at the height of Watergate. I guess there were more important things. The Golan Heights incident was that year. It was a lot of stuff. So a lot of planes were flying around and doing crazy things. So that would explain some of this, but a lot of abductions. Right there in October, Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, and a lot of third kinds. So peak year. So I don't know what else to say, except that, you know, these are direct statements. These are witness statements. These are everything you can possibly get from firsthand evidence, except for it landing on the White House lawn, right? That's what everybody.
Well, we just sent him a picture of it.
Yeah, it could have been. Could have been. Nixon was kind of busy.
So, yeah.
And maybe that's why they were like, we're good. We're good. And then that whole, the coin incident, oh my gosh, that actually gets into the United Nations. I don't know why these things aren't talked about more. Anyway,
because it would terrify the crap out of everybody if it was really proven that they've been here and they're still here. So we already know that a person is marked. People are stupid. Thank you, Men in Black. And with that, Mark, I'm going to thank our patrons. Thank you for supporting us always. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to check out our event schedule is filling up for next year. So don't forget to check out all the fun places you can come and meet the Erie Travels crew. We are working on our next book, The Dark Heart of the Appalachians. We're hoping to have that up for pre-order at the beginning of the year, which will be exciting. I can call Mark out in public on that. And with that, Mark, I need you to give us some real solid advice we can take away from 1973.
All right. Well, gang, since before the Wright brothers took to the sky in Kitty Hawk, even before the Montgolfier brothers flew their first hot air balloon in the 1700s, there have been stories of unidentified flying objects, right? 1974 documentary, UFOs, Past, Present, and Future. Rod Serling interviews Coyne and the crew from their incident. And he talks about phantom chariots above the sky in ancient Rome and tyrants of the air in the Holy Roman Empire. 20th century, of course, advanced technology. We're here because of the world wars. We had all this going on. We dropped bombs. We dropped everything. And is it any wonder that they came? And that they came looking for us. Imagine if it took them about 30 years to fly here. 1940s, right here in the 70s, they saw some crazy stuff. They were here. They were ready. Inspired a few filmmakers for those late 70 movies. And with that, keep watching the skies, and we'll see you on the other side.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.